Welcome to Off Message. I'm Isaac DeVere.
I'm all for the thoughts and prayers, and our hearts are with you, and symbols matter and words matter. This is a time for action, and I completely reject this notion that there's nothing we can do.
Today's guest, Phil Murphy, who just last month became the new governor of New Jersey. He replaced Chris Christie, putting a Democrat in charge of what's usually thought of as a pretty solidly blue state, but had had a Republican governor for 8 years. Most people were paying attention to other races last year. Murphy was the front runner through the primaries and then through the general election, and it was never competitive. So you may not have noticed that he snuck in as maybe the most liberal governor in America, across the board, on all sorts of issues. He's rich, made somewhere between tens of millions and hundreds of millions at Goldman Sachs, and never ran for office before the race he won last year. He was, as you'll hear, not too pleased when I said that there were some similarities between him and President Trump. He did do some other things along the way, including serving as Obama's first ambassador to Germany, where he was pretty popular, until he got caught up in the very first WikiLeaks dump, the big one, of all those diplomatic cables, and he had to answer for saying Angela Merkel was insecure, among other things. Here's why I wanted to talk to him, though. As it happens, Tuesday afternoon, Murphy did a big event talking about the gun legislation he wants to pass. Part of that included legislation restricting magazine size and caliber that the state legislature put out after the Newtown shooting. That was back in 2012. But that Christie had said he wouldn't sign and disagreed with. So that's Tuesday. Wednesday, of course, was the latest school shooting massacre in Florida. 17 people dead. And like every time, the debate went around about doing something and whether it was the right time to do something or even to talk about doing something. Though this time with the extra layer of Florida Governor Rick Scott and others raising questions about the FBI response to the threats, and then some of them, including President Trump, making a link between the murders of these mostly children to the FBI spending time and energy on the Mueller probe. Well, Murphy, he has his idea of what the something is. Maybe you agree with it. Maybe you disagree with it. Maybe you think the answer is armed guards in schools or focusing on the mental health and threat reporting aspects of response. But what's different about Murphy is that at least when he says something needs to be done, he's doing, you know, something. Because what certainly seems to be true about these mass shootings is that we can, sadly, almost count on another one coming at this point. And also say that America does have a particular problem with these, which other countries do not, not in the same way. And this isn't just an idea that he came to suddenly. Murphy kicked off his gubernatorial campaign talking about gun control. And broadly, that's the other reason why I wanted to talk to him. We're all going to hear a lot of ideas and promises and thoughts and proposals from people running in the midterms. But Murphy is, number one, one of only three people who's won a statewide election since the last presidential election. Number two, he flipped the party control of his seat. And number three, ran with a pretty clear sense of what he was going to do. So if people are thinking about what might work in a campaign and then in governing, Murphy at least has a case to make a suggestion. So I got in the car over the weekend and drove up the turnpike and threw some jug handles. There's a Jersey reference for some of you to get. And sat down with Murphy after a meeting he was having with some local mayors at Monmouth University. And we got into it. There's much more about this on the article up on the website, so please check that out too. I should say, we also reached out to the NRA after the shooting in the hopes of having someone from there on. But I didn't get any response to the phone call or email I sent trying to set it up. We're also still hoping to bring you the conversation with Congressman Matt Gaetz, but he put it off the day after the shooting when we were supposed to record, saying that he had to get home to Florida. And then we'll have Washington Governor Jay Inslee, who's the chair this year of the Democratic Governors Association, coming up, and many more. Lots to think about and argue about with all this. Let me know your thoughts on it. Email me at isaac@politico.com or hit me up by following me on Twitter at Isaac Dover. Or liking my Facebook page. Who else do you want to hear from? What are you thinking about? What are the issues that you want to see addressed as we go through this year? One of my favorite parts of doing this is hearing from you, writing back. And remember to subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or however you're listening. Those ratings help spread the word, but even better is if you spread the word yourself and tell someone you know, get them to subscribe so that they can hear all the great stuff we're getting into on Off Message. And now, my conversation with Phil Murphy. Tell me about selling textbooks.
You don't get that question every day.
Well, you don't get a lot of people who've sold textbooks.
That's true. It's, wow. So I was, I got out of Harvard in 1979 and I was an economics major, but my passion was theater. And about up until a couple of months, Hasty Pudding, 4 years, the Hasty Pudding show, I think along with another guy in my same class, I think we were the first ever to be in it 4 years. And I was president my senior year. And I had this crazy idea that maybe theater was in the cards for me. And I only folded the tent on that idea with a couple of months to go in my senior year. And my options, therefore, at that point were quite limited. I applied to graduate school at the Wharton School, but I chose to defer that because I just felt like I wasn't ready. And the one job I got was to sell textbooks.
Okay, college textbooks, right?
To community colleges in the greater Boston area.
But not like door to door stuff. College to college.
No, you get a list of schools that are your responsibility. You go to a teacher. I haven't talked about this in years. You get me really jazzed here. By the way, it's not called a sale because the teacher doesn't buy the book. The kids do. So it's an adoption. So you convince the teacher, right. The professor.
And my professors used to make us pay $400 or whatever. That's how you got rich on textbooks.
Believe me. Although I consider myself a good salesman, the sales part of it did not jazz me. The part that really jazzed me is at the same time you were responsible for selling books, you were responsible for finding authors to write books that would fill in their editorial lineup where they had holes. Mm-hmm. That part was cool.
Were you good at it?
That part I was decent at. I thought I was a middling, and I consider myself a good salesman. For whatever reason, I thought I did a middling job as a salesperson in that particular chapter in my life.
So you are, after that, you went to Wharton. You spent 23 years at Goldman. Goldman Sachs is this sort of entity in American life that most people maybe don't even know anybody who ever worked for it, but know the name. It's full of people who end up in government or in politics. It's full of Democrats and Republicans, but it seems like more Republicans. You did very well for yourself there. You got rich, but you walked out as a liberal Democrat. How did that happen?
Well, I walked in as a liberal Democrat. That's the important point. So I grew up outside of Boston, a Kennedy Democrat. My dad didn't get out of high school. My mom did. We didn't have 2 cents to rub together. So I used to say in the campaign trail, I was working class on a good day, and a friend of mine one day corrected me and said, Murphy, you were working poor. So those years, those experiences.
What did your father do?
My dad did a bunch of things. He managed for the biggest chunk of his life, he managed a liquor store, a package store, as they called them in Massachusetts. He also was a clerk in a garment factory. He was a paid pallbearer. He did a few things.
And your mother?
My mother was principally a secretary. She was mom and secretary.
Very working class.
You got me, absolutely. Big Kennedy folks. So in my...
Yeah,
behind
growing
my
up
desk,
outside of Boston.
You getcha. I've got a picture of my mom and my aunt campaigning for then Congressman Jack Kennedy, who was running for Senate. So this is politics and being a Democrat are deep in my bones. And ironically, for all that Goldman Sachs has become in terms of its perception, a healthy dose of Democrats, at least when I was there, were still roaming the halls. But I went in a pretty progressive liberal Democrat and came out one.
And making millions, and the estimates that people make of your wealth are in the tens of millions, hundreds of millions. You did very well, and you did not change any of your thoughts on it.
No.
And you see that, you know, the argument that many people come to is that as people do better, that they will become Republicans or think about Republican ideology as fitting them better.
I hope that doesn't happen as often as people think it does. I tend to think it doesn't happen as often as people think. It certainly didn't happen to me. Never occurred to me. And it's not just because I'm so sort of some bleeding heart liberal. I really believe all of us, our lives are a book with a bunch of chapters. The most important one for me is chapter one. Secondly, philosophically, I believe with all my heart, if you have a strong, growing, prosperous, confident middle class, and a lot of real sturdy ladders for those who aspire, like we were, looking up to get into the middle class, you've got a stronger society, and that works better for everybody, including the folks at the
top. You'd have done as well for yourself if Democratic ideology was in full force and all the Democratic principles about the economics and taxes and everything.
I've probably selfishly done better, and I don't wear that as a badge of honor. I think the whole trickle-down notion that we saw in the Reagan years – we're now seeing in the Trump era, I just don't believe in it. So in the near term, selfishly, if you've got more than less, you'll do better. in the long run, it's a recipe for economic stagnation and huge inequality. And I know that there's, and you folks write a lot of good stuff about this, the debate over why is the inequality as wide as it mm-hmm. is? I think that's high on the list of villains. If all you think about and take care of are the very, very wealthiest, you're going to lead to what we've got. And I think we've got to push back on that.
Let's talk about last week. You had what ended up being a very odd coincidence of events. On Tuesday, you did a roundtable talking about gun laws that you wanted to pass and you want your signature on that would become law here in New Jersey. On Wednesday, obviously, is a school shooting in Florida. After the school shooting, you have, as happens after all these, people say, well, we need to do something. But it's very rare that that gets filled in. Yep. Or you have people say, not now. This isn't the time. Yep. What would you say to Governor Scott in Florida?
Well, I don't know Governor Scott, but I'll tell you this much. I said this publicly. I'm all for the thoughts and prayers, and our hearts are with you, and symbols matter and words matter. This is a time for action, and I completely reject this notion that there's nothing we can do. And I hope at the end of the day that New Jersey can be a model for actually saying, you know what, there is something you could do. And they've done it. Look at New Jersey. They've proven you could do something. And so I tell you, I've got four kids at varying degrees of schools, including higher ed. They walk into schools every day. The amount of anxiety, the conversations. I just had a meeting with a bunch of mayors and, more importantly, a bunch of moms and dads, and everybody's in the edge of their seats. And I completely reject this notion that there's nothing you can do. And it's, I think, a whole series of things, right? So I think it's a tapestry of, it so happens we had already scheduled a big regional law enforcement dinner the night after the Parkland tragedy. A lot of that discussion was on school security and safety. I called a meeting with our Homeland Security Director and the head of our state police yesterday. We are looking, as you mentioned, we've got a series of gun safety legislation, which, by the way, does walk and chew gum at the same time. It respects the Second Amendment, doesn't go near it, and yet it makes our communities and schools and churches and hospitals and train stations safer. We're reviewing all of our protocols.
That bill that Governor Christie would not sign that was proposed after the Newtown shooting.
Yes, right? There's a whole series
about
of them.
The magazine.
50 caliber, shrinking the magazines, focus on training, strengthening background checks, a smart gun technology, and really pursuing that. I'll tell you the other idea that we've talked about, and I hope that we're going to begin to action it this week. At the end of the day, we need national gun safety legislation. And the NRA has done, unfortunately, an extremely effective job of separating the will of the people from the actions in Congress. We got to die trying to change that. But what I think is an interim step is we can join with other states and form a coalition like the climate coalition states. And we're hoping to try to get that going this week.
With Senator Rubio saying in response to the shooting, well, you know, if people are going to, they want to get a gun, they're going to get it anyway. This is an argument that we hear from people who are pushing for the Second Amendment argument or the laws don't make the difference argument. What do you say to people who
say
that?
I don't think that's empirically proven. I would say gun laws are part of the answer, and making them common, safe sense and strengthening the safety is part of the answer. But it's also clear we need other elements. That's part of the reason why we called the meeting yesterday to review the protocols around school safety. But I was the U.S. ambassador in Germany. Germany's got a lot of guns, but the incidence of gun crimes is a fraction because they've got a sensible system. We've also got a reality. I can't speak for other states, whether it's Florida or Connecticut or elsewhere. Over 80% of the gun crimes committed in our state are guns that come in from out of state. So this notion of a coalition of states, of like-minded states that share best practices, to me is a very smart interim step toward a national solution.
Are there particular governors that you've talked to about that already?
Well, the obvious ones are in our neighborhood. So I hope, as I say, I hope this week
like
we're going to show some real progress.
Those are people who... who have been very active on the gun issue before.
Amen. So Connecticut and New York are states where we're talking to a lot about joining in a number of arenas, whether it's fighting the constitutionality of the limitation of the state and local tax deduction or offshore drilling, to pick a couple of examples. So those are absolute potential allies.
Do you think you're going to save lives this way?
Yes, I believe that with all my heart.
So then if the math on that would be that if people are not doing this, then they are costing lives, right?
I believe so. I think it's that simple. I'll give you a story I heard on the camp, actually before I was a candidate. A woman in Irvington, right in the urban community, on the rise, by the way, cried her eyes out to me and said that her son had been killed by a guy who took his father's service revolver. The dad was a Newark policeman and killed her son. Now, this happened 20-something years ago, so the relevance then is not what it would be today. If we had promoted, either nationally or in New Jersey, which we will do, the presence of smart gun technology, which in my simple terms would be if it's not your fingerprints on the gun, it's not your biometrics, that gun's not discharging, that kid would be alive today. I think the evidence is overwhelming that we will save lives.
Do the people who say don't pass new laws, do they not care about saving people in your mind?
Well, I'm sure they care, but I'm sure their campaigns are funded by the gun lobbies, unfortunately, in too many cases, and
I
can't say
funding? That about everything. Because it seems like the funding, it's millions of dollars, and that's not irrelevant. But what it is that there are a lot of people who get very activated on this issue.
Yeah, it could be not just the direct funding to them or to their party, where the numbers are much bigger, but also perhaps to their constituents, that they are part of that. I don't know, but the evidence I do know is overwhelming and unambiguous. Smart gun safety laws, common sense laws will save lives.
I mean, this was something you were talking about on the campaign trail throughout, and we're talking about before the shooting in Florida. Of course, it's not the first school shooting even in 2018. So
can you believe, by the way, it's the 18th?
That number it seems like not quite right, but it's somewhere.
It's off by a few. I mean, it's
a lot.
Extraordinary.
It's a lot. And you know, we're a couple of months out from the Las Vegas shooting and the Pulse shooting, and you know, it's.
it's pretty. It's not like you have to search hard to find the trend here. This is insane. This is absolutely insane. We know. And by the way, is it sensible, common sense gun safety laws? Absolutely. Is it other smart things? One idea that we've talked about is particularly egregious weapons that are still legal, putting a significant tax on them and plowing all the proceeds of that tax back into either law enforcement programs or mental health programs, perhaps addressing.
I mean, I talked to Shannon Watts, who's works with Moms Demand Action, who she said to me that anybody who's allowing these guns to be on the streets has essentially blood on their hands at this point because they're not taking action, that they are leading to the murders of children. You think that's right?
Well, Tim, that's a stark statement, but I think I know the converse of that is right, which is if we pass common sense gun safety laws, we will save lives unambiguously.
There are a lot of things you talked about when you were running in a race that most people weren't paying as much attention to because it felt like
I was,
you
by
were,
the way.
You were. But you ran through the year. You were ahead in the primary. There was never really a point where you were behind in the primary. There was never a point in the general election when you were behind. And so people, I think, maybe didn't pay as close attention to the things that you were talking about and saying that you would do as governor. Well, now you're governor.
Yes.
Do you feel you won by 13 points?
14.1, Isaac, but who's counting?
No, I wouldn't expect somebody who worked in finance to know the numbers well. Do you feel like you have a mandate for all the things that you talked about on the trail?
I believe we've got a mandate, yes, for the core precepts, core concepts of what we talked about, a stronger and fairer economy that works for everybody. And a different way to put it, a Republican friend of mine coined this, tagged me with this about 6 months ago, a pro-growth progressive. We are a proudly progressive state.
You like that term?
I like it. Our progressive soul was, not only was our progressive soul ripped out of us for the purposes of someone's national right-wing ambitions.
Who could that someone be that you're talking about?
But we stopped growing. We stopped growing. So not only are the inequities widening, not only did we not end up standing for the right things, whether it's funding women's health or signing sensible gun safety laws or doing something about climate change, like gun safety, where the evidence in climate is overwhelming, we weren't even doing the stuff that you would have expected we'd be doing, which would be growing our economy. So that, to me, is the mandate. We've got stronger, fairer, get it working for everybody, and retake that progressive soul.
Is that what you think Democrats need to be doing overall?
That's above my pay grade. I'd be operating without a license in that one. I'm 1,000% focused on New Jersey.
You were a former DNC official. You were the finance chair 10 plus years ago, right? You have thought about national politics from that frame. You are one of the people who has won since Donald Trump was elected. And so you're crossing yourselves. Good Catholic boy, I guess, still, right? So if people are looking for a formula of what to do, you are one of the cases where people could say, like, maybe that's what to do.
Listen.
It obviously worked in New Jersey.
Yes. But yes. The silver lining, I have to say, of a busted economy, which is what we've inherited, is it hasn't worked for anybody. So we didn't have to spend a whole lot of time figuring out what coalition we were with. We were with anybody who believed we needed a stronger economy. We needed more jobs created. You know, we're a state. You look at our history, and I'm a big believer, you got to maximize the hand you were dealt as opposed to trying to come up with another hand. And the hand we've been dealt is infrastructure, given our location. And we were Silicon Valley before there was one. The innovation economy is a natural for New Jersey, whether it's Einstein or Edison.
On the bridge in Trenton, Trenton makes the world takes. Which to me always is like passive aggressive, it seems like.
Listen, we lead the
every
nation.
Time that I go by that bridge.
Yeah, I believe me, I've thought about that one long and hard. We lead the nation in exporting high school seniors and college seniors per capita. And so I always say, listen, I'd like our number one export to be something other than our young people, but
a lot of them come back.
But listen, you got to wear it also as a badge of honor that the world wants our kids. They believe in our education system. So I believe that we have to get that economy growing, get it fair, make it work for everybody, and get back to standing for the things that we used to so proudly stand for.
But that's something that Democrats are struggling with in a wider way.
Perhaps. I'm not suggesting there isn't a lesson beyond New Jersey, but I'm spending 1,000% of my time focused on New Jersey.
Yeah, you've been governor for
32 days and counting, but who is counting, right?
I want to talk a little bit about healthcare. What Andrew Cuomo is doing in New York is stuff with the state-funded exchange. What is your sense of what to do now? You believe in Obamacare, I assume, and not happy with what happened through the tax bill. What would you do for the state exchange, and would you have a state mandate?
Yeah, so we are a Medicaid expansion state. It's a decision that was made under Governor Christie. It's one that we obviously support. Medicaid is a big central element in our reality as a state. You know, we had as a national party back in the primary, it feels like 1,000 years ago. You're talking about the Clinton Sanders primary season
we're still living through it.
Another time and place. But there was that big debate, do you burn the place, do you burn the thing down and you have a universal plan? Or do you acknowledge that you're halfway up the mountain in the Affordable Care Act, the imperfect Affordable Care Act, which I believe even to this day President Obama would agree with, and just try to make it better and get up that mountain.
They used to say it was like they put the ball on the field and they wanted to keep moving it down.
Yeah, and I think that's right. That's a good way to look at it. I came out on the camp that, listen, if you're halfway or three quarters up the mountain, let's keep at it. And I probably still would be there. I never expected Donald Trump would get elected president when I was opining on that. He's now president. We have to consider everything.
So do you do a state exchange?
Well, no, the problem is it's extraordinarily expensive. And I think California priced out universal health care. I believe this is right. That over 10 years, it was going to cost them $400 billion. We have a $35 billion state budget.
But a smaller population.
We have 9 million. We're, I think, the 11th largest state in the nation. So I'm continuing. We're going to consider everything, and we will. But it's an awful, this administration has taken us down many awful paths, and this is one of them. And you're in this awful situation of going from that very optimistic, we're well down the road toward universal health care, which, by the way, Germany has, and it was brought to you by that left-wing lunatic Bismarck, just to prove it isn't left-right, or now in the Trump reality, that road is a lot longer to travel. And so we will consider everything.
Have you seen any benefits so far from the tax bill? The president and his allies would say that companies are benefiting from this. New Jersey is and that is going to workers and bonuses and other ways. New Jersey is a place where a lot of companies, there are a lot of people who work either for companies in state or in Pennsylvania or in New York.
We are, I'd say two things. One is, first of all, I would just again reiterate, I'm a flat out huge critic of this tax bill. This is back to the
because
the ultimate,
of the state and local.
Well, that's a specific issue to New Jersey. But the broader point is, if you accept the analyses that has been done, and I think you all have written about, when all is said and done, and I don't mean next year or the year after, but when over a 10-year time frame, 83% of the benefits, I believe, are going to go to the top 1%. In the country. And that's not the America that I know. That's, again, failed trickle down. That will widen inequities and not shrinking. I'm a big believer, as I said, you go in, you build strength in the middle class and the ladders to get into it, you got a stronger society. In the New Jersey case, the limitation in New York and Connecticut and California and a few others, the limitation of the state and local deduction is particularly destructive. And we're fighting that, by the way. We're fighting it constitutionally, the legality of it, and we're fighting it by, in other creative ways, trying to repurpose payments above that $10,000 threshold. And we're going to die trying because it can't stand. It's unacceptable. One positive element, thanks to Senator Booker and Senator Scott, or opportunity zones, which we are working on right now, which basically, that's the one wrinkle in this tax bill that's got a positive glimmer of hope, which is essentially a program that puts chum in the water to incent investment into high poverty areas, and that's a good thing. So we're working hard on that.
That's an example of Senator Booker, who's a Democrat, worked on this bill, which is a Republican-led bill. And one of the things that Republicans said about the Democratic response to the tax bill was, hey, if you wanted it to be better for things that you cared about, you should have worked with us more on it. Democrats, for the most part, said no, that we're not working on this bill at all. And that led to things in the Republican telling of this that, like with the state and local taxes no longer being exempted, if the people who were most concerned about that, who are representing Democratic areas, were not at the table, then those concerns weren't going to be heard. So in that case, in the case of what to do in a larger way about national legislation going, do Democrats need to be working with Republicans more, or do they need to stick by the principles that they say that they are for?
I'm trying to measure, Isaac, my response here because
you don't need to measure. Yeah. You can also curse. We're on a podcast.
Yeah, no, so. I won't curse. I'm not in Washington, so I'm in New Jersey, and that's my focus. So I can't say exactly. I wasn't there to see the plays being called, but I was involved. With our congressional delegation. I was involved with Governor Cuomo, Governor Brown, and I spoke and did a conference together. And we had a pretty deep sense, particularly the New York delegation, lesser but pretty good sense of the California delegation. I reject completely this notion that Democrats weren't letting themselves be known. You know this. This is the biggest, most comprehensive bill to ever come into law in the time frame and the lack of transparency, the lack of hearings. You'll remember that Friday night, I believe, 500 pages of amendments, many of them handwritten. This was jammed down the throats of the American people. So I completely reject that.
What about the larger question here of how Democrats approach what is ahead in Washington and in debates going on around the country? Do you think that people need to do as they're running this year, as they're governing this year, what you did and be right out there and pretty liberal in what you're saying, or find ways to talk about compromise?
I think, again, I would be practicing without a license to opine on what others are facing in their campaigns this year. But if you look at how we've thought about this, I would say, be clear-eyed and hold and stand your ground on the stuff where you've got disagreements and stick to your guns. And be very clear separating that from items where you could engage in a legitimate discussion, debate toward compromise. In my case, in our case in New Jersey, we're going to fight that tax law to the final breath. I'm going to stand up and push back on any step toward offshore drilling. I'm going to make sure that we are the nation's model and prove that on gun safety, you can do something. But on the other hand, I want to find common ground with this administration and Republican leadership on infrastructure investment. I want that gateway tunnel built.
Would you rather other Democrats around the country run and be bold in what they're thinking and push for liberal ideas like you did and potentially lose, or be going for the middle ground and chasing the voters in the middle that we always hear
about? What's that great phrase, go big or go home? I don't know. In our case.
But you're going to be living, you're governor of New Jersey, but you're going to be living in a country where that is shaped by what happens in the midterms this year.
Yeah.
So do you think, you said you don't know what's going to work, but which would you rather see people do?
I think we should be clear-eyed about what we believe in and stick to our guns. And also be clear-eyed about where you're willing to compromise. Infrastructure for us is an area where I want to sit down and roll up my sleeves. I don't want to have a compromise discussion about the extent to which we're going to have offshore drilling off our shore. That's black and white. Figuring out the exact funding of the Gateway Tunnel, which would be the first tunnel built under the Hudson River in over 100 years. I want to get at a table, roll up my sleeves, work with congressional members, work with both sides of the aisle, get that done.
Does the Trump and White House seem serious about infrastructure?
I wish I could give you a stronger answer. They talk a very good game. I thought that announcement last week had a lot. It was wanting, let's put it that way. Very little federal money, disproportionate amount of private money. I worry that it will end up taking us toward projects that are not mission critical and away from projects like the Gateway Tunnel, which are life and death.
You brought up Bismarck. You brought up gun laws in Germany. So I'm going to bring up some stuff from related to your time as ambassador to Germany.
I had to see this coming.
You got in some hot water during the campaign because of some comments that came up. You were talking about Trump, and you said something like, "From being in Germany, you saw the history of the 20s and the 30s."
Yep.
Okay, so we're a year into Trump. Do you think that is a fair way of thinking about this?
What I said, I stand by, which is. Sometimes societies begin down a slippery slope. And when institutions and individuals, and I say both, realize that you're going down that slippery slope, it is, unfortunately, history proves that sometimes it's too late to catch that train and stop it.
Are we going down a slippery slope?
Well, I would say one thing that is not a positive surprise, but I think we have to say, for the most part, but I will tell you, I'll give you an incomplete answer or incomplete grade, is we have great institutions in this country. And for the most part, they're resilient. Having said that, when you start to attack the credibility of the big institutions, and I don't mean related to Parkland because it obviously looks like a ball got dropped and I'm not smart enough to know how that happened or
who's to blame. You're talking about the president attacking the FBI intelligence community.
The intelligence community. That is a bad data point on that concern that I have.
So the responses to people who have made any kind of comparison in that ballpark is – you get one set of responses like that's just leading to more divisions in this country. It's not healthy. It's not good for the political discourse. It's not good for our civic discourse. Another response is, hey, if we're dealing with something that is as dangerous as you seem to think it is, like, shouldn't people be calling it out strongly every day?
I'm in the latter camp. I'm not suggesting, by the way, and I want to make sure folks who listen to this, I'm not suggesting, please God, that it doesn't end up as it ended up. In Germany. I'm not suggesting that. But I am suggesting that we can do potentially irreparable harm to our country, to our values, to our institutions, if we don't get out ahead of this. And I think if that's what we believe, we have to call that out.
Is it worse now than it was when you made those comments a year ago?
I'm not sure I think his presidency is, and I had low expectations on things like this, I think his presidency has been worse than I expected. I think, thank God, there have been other stabilizing forces. But I think when you attack our institutions that are, I think of the institutions, and again, they're not perfect, and they're proven, we've seen that this week. We have a lot of institutions who are umpires and referees, essentially, in life. Their job is to exist on a level playing field and call balls and strikes. And when you start to politicize them and attack them and shift the playing field, and when the referee becomes in the tank or is accused of being in the tank for one of the teams, that's a dangerous precedent.
You know Angela Merkel, and some of your thoughts about her actually became public at one point, and you was one part of a long relationship. What do you think she makes of President Trump?
Well, I thought you were going to say, what do you think she makes a year in her salary? And I don't know the answer to that either.
So we come back to finance with you, I guess.
I don't know. I mean, Germany, and I know the chancellor quite well, and I am a huge fan. And I think she's been an extraordinary force for the good. Even when we don't agree with her, she has always been an extraordinary partner, incredible partner. She is a passionate believer. Remember, this is a woman who's a daughter of a preacher who picked up his family and moved them to East Germany, and that's where she grew up. She believes with unlimited passion in the transatlantic relationship, in the American ideal,
being challenged,
in our exceptionalism, in the fact that we're a beacon to the world. So I don't know her innermost feelings about the president, but I think when that transatlantic bridge is challenged, when the essence of America is challenged, that beacon that we are, to so many. Again, remember, she's growing up behind the Iron Curtain looking up at us. Her dream was to visit California. I wish New Jersey had been on that list, by the way. I hope we could still get it on the list. But I could only imagine. But I know that, I know how she feels about our country and our place in the world.
I made a passing reference to the WikiLeaks incident. And you,
oh, my
the
gosh.
First one when you were drawn into, we were thinking WikiLeaks in a different way, the diplomatic cables. And
yep.
You had some disparaging things that you said about Merkel and others. And your response was somewhat famously that you walked into the chancellery and you said, this is what happened and let's deal with it. You talked to the German press about it. They were not happy. There were some people who were saying you should be recalled. You weren't. And so what is that experience of being hacked like, of having your information out there? It's something that has become more and more common in the political world.
It's extraordinary. It was over 7 years ago. And you think of how hacking has become almost, and look at what this week alone with the Russians and the 2016 election. It was an experience unlike anything I've ever lived through before. It came out of left field. And by the way, I still refer to those cables as alleged cables. We've never acknowledged that those are cables, I might add. It did teach me one thing, and that is if you've got a crisis like that, you got to get out ahead of it. Don't let it drag you. You've got to get out
it. Do you feel like we're being attacked? Like,
yes, 100%.
And with this, with the indictments that came from Mueller?
Absolutely.
This is an attack on America.
I'm not a lawyer. I'm not qualified, but the level of specificity in those indictments was the most shocking part of it. I assume that the Russians were involved, but the level of specificity was quite shocking.
Okay, so you are a businessman who'd never run for office before. That sounds like President Trump.
Isaac, you can't end with this.
There are not a lot of similarities beyond that. But you're a month into being governor, and I wonder if it has changed at all your thought of what he is doing, how he's approaching it, trying to bring the businessman sensibility into government, at least in the way that he talks about it, and coming in as a person who hasn't been as mixed up in the government and political process and so has a fresh look at it.
Yeah, listen, I'm not a fan of the president or how he's approaching things. So I'm going to say I can't speak for him, but I don't like what I see. I can't speak for what we're doing. I may not have been elected before, but I was, I did serve my country. I was, as you said, the national finance chair of the Democratic National Committee. I've been involved in lots of nonprofits and other civic organizations. So I've at least been around enough models where I have a decent, I make a lot of mistakes, believe me,
but
a decent horse sense of how you put it together.
Does it challenge the businessman into politics argument that you obviously made yourself? since you don't agree with how he's been approaching it.
Yeah, again, I can't speak for, I mean, I know how what I think about his administration and how they're approaching our economy, our country, our position in the world, and I don't like it for the most part. I don't think it's necessarily because he's a businessman. I left my business career in 15 years ago. Yeah. So I feel like I've got a lot of chapters since then that are frankly informing me a lot more than the chapters before. I hope that I'll recall back to that pro-growth progressive. I hope some of my business chops will contribute to my ability to amp that pro-growth side up. And that's the way I think of it.
I'll end with this. I was surprised as I was talking to people about you that some people have read into your criticisms of President Trump to say you are interested in running for president yourself.
Oh, geez, Louise. No.
I know you're 32 days into the job.
No. I mean, that is
100% now.
Oh, 100%. No, it has to be. I am 1,000% focused on New Jersey. And I think that's a mistake that gets made. And we've paid a big price for that. We had that in our state not that long ago. And the governor in the state needs to be focused on nothing else and that other than New Jersey, and that's what I am.
Even though you tap danced your way up to your victory speech,
it wasn't a tap dance, but it was. I cut a move there. I do want to acknowledge that. Yes,
it's we can't do it on a podcast. It won't work.
We cannot do it on a podcast, but maybe we'll do this live at some point.
All right, Governor Phil Murphy, thanks for taking the time.
Thanks, Isaac.
Well, we didn't have a chance to talk about in this one. Murphy is, weirdly but truly, a close friend of Jon Bon Jovi. Maybe next time. Thanks to Zach Stanton for producing, and thanks to the tow truck operator who came to help me out on the way back from Jersey when I hit a pothole and my tire went flying across the highway somewhere in northern Delaware. This one came to you with quite an adventure in the part you don't get to see. Remember, coming up, we've got Governor Jay Inslee and Congressman Matt Gaetz and many more. Make sure you subscribe and tell a friend and follow me on Twitter at Isaac Dover. We made it to 42,000 followers, so you know what that means. Let's make it to 43,000. And catch you next time on Off Message.